Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Ellen Potter, author, Mainer, parent of free-range kids. Welcome to All the Wonders, the children's book podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 279 of the podcast with Ellen Potter, author of The Sea Pony, book 3 in her Piper Green and the Fairy Tree chapter book series. I came to know Ellen better, not from her well-known Olivia Kidney series, but from a guest post she wrote for All the Wonders about doing a series of author visits to one-room schoolhouses on the islands of coastal Maine. Needless to say, I was fascinated. She pours all of her experiences of being a Mainer into her Piper Green series, and there's something so wholesome and pure about the series that I've completely fallen for it. Have your readers discovered Piper Green yet? If so, there's no doubt they feel they've made a friend. Here's episode number 279 of the podcast with Ellen Potter. Welcome to the podcast, Ellen Potter. I know you know. I'm very excited to talk to you tonight.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Totally thrilled.
Ellen, thank you for writing for children. Thank you for Olivia Kidney and for Piper Green and for being on All the Wonders and that wonderful guest post that we'll talk about later. But just thank you. You write books with such a fun voice. I love your characters. I love these people that you create, and I'm glad that you're writing for our children.
Oh, why, thank you.
I especially love that this interview has been like 9 months in the making.
But, a lot to think about. I've been thinking about potential questions for a while.
But I'm grateful too that has meant that I've gotten to be there at the beginning of the Piper Green series, and now to welcome Piper with The Sea Pony. And a book that I should say, we took on our vacation this summer, and instead of listening to music in the car or the kids sleeping or whatever, we just read Piper Green the entire drive down, and it was wonderful. So I got to be
so
your book on tape, buddy.
It
was great. So why don't I just give you a moment with the people listening to share, I don't know, just the overarching story of Piper Green.
Sure. Well, I moved to a little coastal town in Maine several years ago. And I guess the town I live in is tiny, and my son goes to a pre-K through eighth grade school where there are only 50 kids in the whole school. We had 2 kids in the graduating class last year. So just this lifestyle was so, I was overwhelmed at how it really sort of felt kind of exotic. But then I started to meet people from the islands around here. There are these little islands off the coast of Maine, and began to hear about the life of the kids on these islands. And these kids, I mean, in the town I live in, the kids are pretty free, but out on the island, it's really, they're truly free range kids. Their playground is the ocean and the quarries, and they're out all the time, and they're helping their kids out, their parents out on the fishing boats, and it's a very Huck Finn kind of lifestyle. And some of these islands are very tiny. There may be only 30 to 40 people who live on the island year round. So some of the islands don't, in fact, have their own schools. The ones that do have their own schools, they're often one-room schoolhouses. There might be 10 to 20 kids in the school. I visited one school where there were two kids in the entire school.
Two and a
Two
teacher. That's
kids and a teacher. Yeah, and it actually functioned surprisingly well. And yeah, there were two 8th grade boys, and they were very good friends, and they it the school functioned exactly like a regular school would function, except there were just two of them. But some of the kids are on islands that are so small that there isn't any school, and these kids do take a lobster boat or a mail boat to school. And so I just when I heard about these communities and started to meet the people, I was really enamored, and I knew that I wanted to write something, I wasn't quite sure what, that was set on these islands. A little bit before this, though, I had an conversation with a friend of mine who lives in New York State, and she told me about this tree in her neighborhood. It was a very old
I know
tree.
where you're going. I'm getting goosebumps. Oh my word.
Yeah, no, the whole Piper Green series was really a mashup of several things that had happened, but so there was a very old tree in the neighborhood, and it was the people loved it, and the city came in and they said it was not safe and they had to cut it down, so they cut this tree down, much to everybody's chagrin, and there was just a stump that was left. So some man in the neighborhood carved out a hole in this tree stump. And people began to leave things in that hole in the tree. They would leave clothes that their kids didn't fit in anymore, and books they'd read, or toys that their kids didn't play with. And anyone was free to come in and go to the tree and take out whatever they wanted to have. And the only rule was that you had to leave something in its place. And this became known as the gnome tree. And I think there was an article written about it. It was pretty amazing, and I love the idea of a tree, where you leave things and you take things, and I wrote it down in my journal, not quite knowing what to do with it. But then I had, this experience with the islands, and then on top of that, I have three dogs. I promise you, these stories do kind of connect. I have three dogs. And
We're
they,
seeing like unraveling in front of our eyes. We're seeing all 12 of the Piper Green books for the next 10 years.
it's true. And actually, it took a lot of thinking when, to even figure out, oh, wait, how did Piper Green even start? Sometimes you have to really backtrack,
Yeah.
and I picked apart the different threads of how it all came about. But the final thread was, I have these dogs that and I'm constantly walking them because I like to. When I get stuck in my writing, I always walk my dogs. So there are woods in the little town where I live in, and I was taking my dogs up to the woods for their walk. And I noticed that when we got to this one section of the woods, the path got really narrow, and the trees got small here. And it was just the whole area was covered with this very vibrant green moss, and it even smelled differently in this part of the woods. And my dogs would act very strangely when we got to this section of the woods. They would stop and they'd sniff the air and look around as if there was something there, and I couldn't see anything. And it just was one of these goose pimply kind of places. And I remember thinking, well, if there is such a thing as fairies, this is exactly where they would live. So
Whoa.
those three elements kind of came together, and Piper was born.
Oh, I love that. Oh, I love that. So what strikes me too as just unbelievable is that for all that I'm sure you read and for all that I read, you being an author, me working with children for over 10 years now, I loved that this was a new experience for me to know that of course, I mean, it makes sense, but to know that here in America we've got these places that are, I mean, to think that there's like island life in New England where you're going by boat to get to a school that only has like 10 kids, it's just something you're the word you pulled the words right out of my mouth. The idea that it's exotic,
It is.
that who would think that this is a thing that there are people growing up with this experience? And I love that you so beautifully capture it with Piper Green and how great it is that Piper Green, I feel like, hits that sweet spot that those chapter books do right around, I don't know, the beginning readers, the first graders through third graders. And so you have that age where you're so rapidly learning at how big and diverse the world is. And then you have this book to show that, at least for where we live, there's a chance that there are schools like this, probably somewhere in Southern Maryland. I would assume that I know the population gets very thin in Southern Maryland, but also to know up in Maine, which isn't that far from us, that this experience is happening is just it's just awesome.
Yeah, no, it's lovely, and one of my favorite things about the island living, and I hope it shows in the books too, is the how tight the community is. They really have each other's backs. I mean, I don't know that they always like one another. I mean, I think, living on an island all winter long with just 30 people could probably there's some people that you may not that may drive you nuts, but they always watch each other's backs, and they have to, because that it's difficult to get to the mainland, especially in the winter. And if someone is sick, if someone needs help, they're always there. They watch each other's
I
kids.
was just gonna say, they're acting out that mantra of it takes a village to raise a child. Here's a community where they really are raising, where everyone is playing a hand in raising the children. And I think that you can see too in your book that the children listen to all the other adults too. It's not just that I don't know who that stranger is, I'm going to listen to my parents, but that everyone is tight knit so that when a stranger does come in, when something unusual does come to town, like in this case of when a pony comes to the island, it is something that brings all of the attention to the docks, that brings all the questions out of children.
Exactly. And the small things, small things like, what's coming on the ferry, and it's something new, and it gets everybody excited. I mean, it life just had takes a different turn when you're out on these islands. And the other thing that I really was so impressed by, I went on a book tour to the various islands through a organization called Island Readers and Writers, and they bring authors to these island kids who otherwise might not have, it's just not very accessible. So they I went to these little one room schoolhouses, and the kids are all sort of together. The grades are pretty much lumped together, and the kids are from like the kindergarten kids and the eighth grade kids spend a lot more time together than you would find in typical school. And I remember seeing this one little boy out in recess, and he was playing with other little kids, and he hurt himself. He fell and he hurt himself and started to cry. And before the teachers could even sweep in, the older kids just they were on him so fast, and they got him away from, they sort of picked him up, and they involved him in their game, and they distracted him. And it was just like the best sort of older sibling situation. They really function like a family, and they watch it. The kids too, they're watching out for each other just like the adults watch out for each other. So yeah, it's very special. It's a very special way of living. And when I read books, one of the things that I love is when an author can take me to a place that I've never seen. Something very new, or I mean, it's a place that I'd want to be. And that's what I was sort of hoping for in Piper Green, that I wanted my readers to feel like they were living on this island just for a little bit and feel what that could be like.
Well, I could see that, Ellen, and I think that I could say that I experienced that reading it as well. And I wonder if my son, as we were reading it to him, felt that at all. I'll have to ask him. But the feeling of wanting to go, wanting to plan a summer trip around visiting a place like Northern Maine that you could experience, or coastal Maine that you could experience, where Piper lives in that way, that you could just be near what it looks like to see. I mean, even I think for my son to see islands and see that there are houses on these islands, that there are other people living, not just in the communities like we live in. It was an experience that made me feel like this is something that I could see my son asking me one day, reading a book and asking, can we go here? I want to see what this is like. So that was really cool. And I think you do that effectively.
Good. And the beauty is you actually can visit those places.
You can.
Those places you read about, you can visit. But
and the traffic wouldn't be nearly as annoying, because it's like it's like a book tour for chapter book kids. It's not like a Brad Pitt filmed his recent post-apocalyptic movie on the coastal islands of Maine.
Exactly.
It's something that can still be... Maybe I guess the way I'm trying to say it is that you can still be sort of unobtrusive, but be someone that respects the area and gosh, I picture kids just like clutching their Piper Greens, their copies of Piper Green, and like going through the town, because I'd also bet that there are people around there that know you because you're in some way you're writing their story.
Yes, and it was interesting when I visited these kids on the islands, and one of the things that several of them had said was, you wrote about us, like you wrote a book about us. They were so thrilled because, you know, they don't think that their life is anything unusual. And the other thing that they were very happy that I'd written about was the in Piper Green, her older brother has to go away to go to school, because many of these schools only go to the eighth grade. So when you get to high school, you might very well have to leave your family and go to the mainland and either live with another family on the mainland, or sometimes schools have dorms and you're away, you know, very young, you're living away from your family. And that's a very difficult thing and a very scary thing. And the kids were really happy that I wrote about that, because it's something they deal with all the time, missing their siblings or, it's a very unusual problem, but a real one.
To imagine growing up in a school of, let's talk about your son, growing up in a school of 50 kids, and that also then means that you're in a school that you grow up with your siblings in school, which isn't also isn't a thing that happens. I mean, I'm at a school of 800 kids. There's, you know, an even greater chance that the siblings in my school would never even see each other during the school day, because the wings are so large. But to be in a place where for however many crossover years you're with each other at this school, and then suddenly to go away from this one room that you've known for 8 or 9 years to whatever sort of other prep school, is completely a different experience.
Exactly. And in fact, the school where I went to visit, where there were only two, with the two boys, it was really, it was a very good example of how these kids might experience the leaving the island. They were both eighth graders. One of them wanted to go and see what the world was like. And he was excited and he had no plans of spending the rest of his life on the island. The other one, was going to be a lobster fisherman, and that's it. Knew that. And like many of the kids there, they wind up being lobstermen. So he was not really particularly interested in leaving. He had to, you know, to go to high school, but he already knew what he was going to be. So I think that, you know, you see that too there. There's some kids that are just itching. They just really cannot wait to leave, and it's just too small for them. And there are other kids that's the way of life, and they never thought of anything else.
And that just makes them kids, because that there is a universal feeling, a universal experience, the feeling of the place I live in is too small or it's too big.
Yeah.
Or I mean, that's everyone goes through that, living in a city or in the country or wherever. That's even the chance to, you've grown up around these same people. I just want to go somewhere else where I can be a new person, where people don't have these presumptions of me. Ah, yeah.
So it's true.
Your son, did you say your son is, how old is your son?
He's 11.
Okay, so he's not quite at that place, but will he also then go away to another school? Will his school end at eight?
Okay. His school ends at eighth grade, and then he'll have to go, to some other school. We're not really sure where, but it might be at a distance and maybe not. But, at least we're on a peninsula, but we're not on an island. Mm. So it's a little bit less terrifying and certainly doesn't need to leave home. But, it's going to be difficult, too, after being in a very tiny school where you know everybody and to go to a high school that's much, much bigger is probably going to be a bit of a shock. Good for the kids, I think, ultimately.
No doubt.
Yeah.
How long have you lived in Maine, and when did you move?
We've been here for 4 years.
Okay.
We lived in Maryland for 1 year before we came here.
I thought so. That's where I was trying to, I said, when did you move? I meant to say where, because I thought it was from down this way.
Well, we were near Annapolis for a year, and mostly we're New Yorkers,
mostly. Near Annapolis, though, you went from one coastal town to another, it sounds like.
I know, but you couldn't, I mean, really, you couldn't get any more different.
I'm sure.
It was so busy down there,
and it is.
So, so quiet here, so very, very different. But yeah, we like the coast.
That's great, and I love that from that, just Piper just visited you.
Yeah, I knew when I moved to Maine, I knew the next book was going to be set in Maine. It's so magical here. It really is. I still, I wake up in the morning and I walk outside and the ocean's there and I think, gosh, this even happened. This is incredible. Still not tired of it.
for this episode, we're not even going to link to anything else. We're just going to have you show us 30 recent photos from your front porch.
Oh yeah, got many of them.
We'll just give little cues. At minute 17, look at photo 6.
Exactly.
Oh boy. Oh, I love that. I'm glad that that's going well for you, and I hope that the Piper Green series is going well. I know before we started recording, you had mentioned that you're working on book 5. So I'm glad to see that she continues to have the opportunity to share her stories with all of us.
Oh yeah, the response has been great, and I hope she keeps on going.
Good. I is that a thing? Can I ask you just shut me down if it gets too personal? But when you started with Piper Green or anything you've ever written, did you set out? Maybe you pitched Piper Green as a series, as a book that could have a series to it.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have an idea of how long you could go, or do you have a goal? Could you, if they allow the opportunity, would you go to 10, or are you at a place where you're sort of trying to write it that if we have to say goodbye to Piper, we're able to at book 10, or if not, we could have another 30 books?
Well, I did pitch her as a series. I pitched it definitely as a series. What's interesting is, I think I could just keep going on with them. It's kind of the way I usually write is I don't plot out my books ahead of time. So I kind of set the book up as a bit of a puzzle for myself. So in each book, there's something that Piper finds in the tree. I never know what that thing is.
And
I never know, ever. And so I have this thing that she finds in the tree that has to sort of function as not only an anchor to the storyline, but it's sort of like the key to solve a problem that she's having. And so often I have this thing that she's found, and I don't know what it is usually until she's actually reached her hand into the tree, into the hole in the tree, and pulled it out. And then I sort of figure out what this thing is. And then I have this problem that she's trying to figure out. And they sometimes seem very, very separate.
Oh my gosh,
and I don't know how they're going to link. So each book I don't, you know, although I have a vague idea of where I want a book to go, each book
Yeah.
sort of feels new and fresh, and somehow it always works amazingly. You know, I sort of drive myself crazy while I'm writing it, trying to figure out how these two things fit together. But they always do. So as long as Piper can find something in her
That's
tree,
right. Have faith in Piper.
as long as she's got a problem, which Piper always seems to have, I think this series has the legs to keep going. It's a lot of fun to write. It's a lot of fun, and I love Piper's voice and her
I love
sass.
her.
And
I love just to contextualize this for the people listening that perhaps haven't discovered Piper yet. In this particular book, in the Sea Pony, the thing she finds in this tree is a whistle, and she doesn't know what it's for. But she, like any kid would, she gets some mileage out of that whistle prior to finding perhaps what, as you're saying, in what way it's a key to a puzzle, without finding the right purpose for this whistle. It's great.
And it is hard sometimes to write that way, you know, because you feel like you're writing without a map. You know, you have this thing,
it's
you
so
have a have
adventurous,
a puzzle.
Though, yeah.
It is, and I feel like the tricky thing with chapter books for me is to keep it simple and yet keep it interesting and meaty and surprising. So I'm used to writing for middle grade books where I can kind of complicate the plot. And with chapter books, you can't really do that. It took me a long time to kind of figure that out. I was writing, you know, I'd start writing and the plots would get more and more complex, and I realized, oh, no, I can't do this. But the way you can keep it interesting for the kids and always and not something that they can figure out what's going to happen or that they'll be bored by the third chapter is if I don't know exactly which way the book is going and how things are going to fit together, the kids aren't going to know either. And I think that in that way, it's keeping the storyline really sort of fresh but simple, I hope.
I can see that because it plays a lot into the asking questions that I was bringing up earlier that comes at that age. My son is full of wondering right now. Everything he needs to know why it works and how it works and what's the reason what's the reason for any of these things happening, like the motivation of trees changing color or the motivation of ants getting into our kitchen. For you to approach a story that way and allow your readers to go on that journey with you, alongside you, of course it's successful. That makes absolute sense that you're allowing yourself to experience the story in that fun way that they get to too. It's not like you're trying to surprise them, but rather you're discovering the surprise alongside them.
Exactly. I'm hoping that that the story can unfold for them the way it's unfolding for me. You know, just sort of the way a day in your life unfolds. You may have a plan for your day, but interesting things always turn up, and your day typically doesn't turn out the way you thought it would, which is, you know, hopefully this is it's translating into the books as well.
Yeah. Now, are you able to write? Is Piper Green your sole focus for writing right now, or are you able to do other things?
I am working on a middle grade book too. So I do, as I love writing the early chapters. Well, no, listen, it's not easy. I grab whatever time I can. I've gotten really good at writing wherever, whenever. I used to be very fussy, and I would only write in a cafe at a certain time. Well, you know, after you have a kid, it's like you will write whenever the opportunity comes up. It's just, you get, very resourceful.
Yeah. Well, good for aspiring writers and early writers to know too that experience can change you and you can become more opportunistic as the time goes by.
It's true, and I think actually having a kid made me use my time a lot more wisely than I used to. And I had long stretches to write. Oh, I could, you know, sit and mull and you know, just worry. And but when you only have a couple of hours here and there, you get down to it really
See,
fast.
that's cool that it's you and it's your brain like primed and ready to go. You've worked that muscle now that when it's writing time, it's time to go, brain.
Exactly.
Ah, that's
That's
cool. Ellen,
yeah.
I love your books. I mean it from my heart. I love Piper Green. I love her. I love the stories. And I seriously, m my family, one day we're gonna take a trip up to Maine. I want you to show me around the islands.
I would love to. There's so much to show you.
I
I would
love it.
love to.
It's enchanting. It's an enchanting story, and I'm glad that you're writing it. I mean, selfishly, I suppose, because I'm now leading, as you went through, I'm leading this weird life where I've been a teacher for years, but now I'm a teacher with kids that are in school, and I'm a teacher of the age that I teach. Because I had a kindergartner. He's going into first grade. So I'm experiencing life and reading books in a very different way. And so it's been fun to then live that out on these podcasts because I can say to you earnestly, we read this book together because he's at the age to hear Piper Green read to him. He's still a growing reader, an emerging reader. But to have that read to him and to be able to react with him to books that way and then have the out-of-body experience of, well, now I'm gonna go talk to that author, buddy. So we're gonna do this. It's just it's a gift. And so I want before I leave you, I just want to tell you how grateful I am that you do spend that time writing and not just writing, but observing what's going on in the world around you, the people around you, the experiences, the events happening, because what you create when you write is something really beautiful and has been part of a really great connection with my son. So thank you for that.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so honored that you said that.
Okay, well, Ellen, thinking now beyond my own son, but to all of those readers, I wanna close with a question for you. And as said earlier, I'm just gonna give you the final say. So I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning or soon. What message, Ellen, would you like for me to bring to them from you?
I would like you to bring this message. That they should think of libraries as their own personal fairy trees, so that every time they visit a library, they'll find a treasure in the form of a book, and that will launch them into a new adventure. And that's what I'd like them to know.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if the episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Aaron Zenz shares Monsters Go Night Night, and I share some monster art my 6-year-old made for Aaron's blog tour. Maybe you'll choose to get your kids or students involved as well. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtimes a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.